Woo! Like a hammer, like Thor's hammer. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Oh, Saturday, one full hour with my two favorite dude fellas, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci and Jacob, chairman of the board. So good to see you guys, you know, hanging out, just shooting, you know, getting ready to shoot the breeze with two buddies, you know, talking the stuff that we like to talk about, educated educators talking education. Jacob, how you doing?
Tim, I'm doing great today.
Nice.
Because I'm just excited to finally have a full hour of my favorite blue-collar scholars, because I've been doing these podcasts with you guys. That's only half, and I can't do it. So yeah, I'm excited to see what you guys have to say here today.
I always want more. Well, Johnny, tell it, man. What's going on with your world?
Hey, not much. You know, it's the end of the month. We're getting up on the end of June, edging up on July. I like July a lot, so I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's summer. It's officially summer. None of this summer talk like we had back in Memorial Day being unofficial beginning of summer and then school's out. Oh, it's summer. No, it's actually we have zoomed past the eclipse. Oh. Or the solstice, not the eclipse. We've eclipsed the solstice. Yeah. And you know, it's Saturday word day though. No, but I'm excited. Lots of stuff is happening. I'm grateful, Tim. I don't know whether it's just my news sources. You know, I'm a little bit doing a double, triple take this Saturday morning. The coffee and the newspaper. Yeah, I still get the newspaper. I'm that guy. It's weekend only, though. I only get the newspapers on the weekend. But I was thumbing through, and then I got online like everybody else because I thought, well, it probably just didn't print, and it's online. But I'm grateful that, you know, it doesn't seem to be too much more. At least at the time we are, Tim, coming together on this, too much more developing out of, you know, things with Iran. I'll admit last week I was pretty heightened about stuff. I was pretty, you know, a roller coaster of emotions, mostly around frustration, you know, reminders of when we were younger and the, you know, the bombings on Iraq and different things that led us into, you know, decades of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some war historians may be even able to correct me and by my flippant decades of conflict. They may even say it was
the
more
war on terror, Johnny, you're referring to.
Well, I mean, just the many fronts of that brought us into Afghanistan. And, you know, it was just a lot of my early teaching years and my high school years. And, you know, we talked, Jacob and I are, you know, we recorded a show for next week, little future teaser, where I talk about, you know, the anxious generation. And we did a lot of talking about, you know, what do we do coming out of college these days? And it's not a show where we're like, well, kids these days. I thought, you know, it was really thoughtful discussion around things are really different. And we all aren't as knowledgeable as we used to be, or as we maybe could be, about what comes after high school or even college. It's a very anxious moment for a lot of young people.
I know the answer to that.
What is it?
Death and taxes.
Well, hopefully for that to happen, it has to happen in the other.
I know. I always like when people always say that they're
taxes
like
taxes and then death
and taxes. I'm like, okay, if it really goes in that direction, but we're a tax-free society.
They're softening the blow, though, Tim. They're like death, and you're like, oh man, but taxes? Okay, taxes. I guess I can deal
nothing
with.
Nothing more optimistic than you know what comes after that? Death and taxes.
Youth today. No, Johnny, you're thinking about that though too, the war on terror, and you say like, you know, I'm actually, you know, a little bit older than you. My first year of teaching actually was the beginning truly of Operation Desert Shield that was when, you know, the takeover of Kuwait.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of push, and remember that happening. That was my very first year of teaching. I was in Southern Virginia, right outside of Norfolk, And you know what? A lot of activity down in that area when that happened. Lots of flyovers over our school building, F-15s, F-16s, whatever you name it. And kind of a freaky time thinking like, whoa, what's happening? You know, luckily, whatever they want to say, that was kind of bloodless is a bad thing, but you know how quickly it was overcome, and the Kuwaiti people seemed to be very happy that we did the work that we did. And afterwards, Lee Greenwood wrote a song and the world was wonderful again.
Yeah, that's exactly how I remember it.
I remember because I'm down in Virginia and I go to Busch Gardens, right?
Oh yeah.
And seriously, that anybody who's not thinking about, yeah, Lee Greenwood, I'm proud to be in that song, came out right after that because it was a tribute.
Willie Nelson was born.
they played that song in Busch Gardens, and everybody stopped and like took off their hats.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was a very, very was, patriotic time.
Yeah.
These colors don't run.
Yeah.
Remember those shirts? That was like the summer of these colors don't run.
Then it, like you said, it then led into, you know, the Bush years and the invasion of Iraq and the quote, the war on terror. But then, yeah, Iran, and I gave a little, what I said was going to be a teaser of going, people might be surprised. But to me, and I am glad that it seems to be that it's not going to be anything more potentially.
Well, nobody wins in war, man.
No, that's nobody wins. But I, you know, it's like for the longest time, it was just like, okay, if there are bad guys,
yeah,
it's about time we finally potentially identified and said, and again, when you say bad guys, there are people who live in that country that are incredibly good guys and good people and good kids. But yeah, there's something about the whole idea of a movement of an ideology of people that run your country. And yeah, you might hear a parallel here, who seem to think that, you know, their existence tops the existence of everybody else around them. So I was really concerned though, yeah, potentially that would have turned into like a really existential type of, holy crap, what are we going to do? I don't necessarily think that taking out Iran's nuclear, not that I actually believe we actually did, but I don't think that that's necessarily a bad idea.
I like us talking about this. That was really good, man. Jacob's up on his old history here. Tim, I like that point because it's not that, like, here's one level of distrust I have, mm-hmm, is at least our president doesn't have a great track record of telling the truth.
Right.
Fact, he tells us this because his own social media platform is titled The Truth. Right. So, you know, it's like usually he was someone says, you know, that like, hey, I'm about to tell you the truth. You know, it's like a sarcasm way of going into a statement that's like, hey, I need you to believe me, even though nobody believes anything I say. So, I mean, he's not the most trustworthy guy, especially in his tweets.
Right.
And that's where I was getting a lot of my information from, was news reports of, you know, those tweets. But then also, Tim, you remember, we went through this.
Right.
Then you said following Desert Shield, Desert Storm, we went through the accusation that the reason, mm-hmm, we needed to be on the ground in Iraq, the reason why, you know, we were glued to our televisions. I wasn't alive for the conflict in Vietnam, but I heard stories and had great teachers, right, who told me like unprecedented, like World War II had happened and different things, Korean conflict in our U.S. history. And you didn't see it televised, mm-hmm, the way that there were news reporters side by side with, there was journalist accounts of what was happening in Vietnam.
Right.
You know, really changed and was part of that whole war protest moment of seeing, you know, that this is not a joke. This is not, you know, a Hollywood production. But we were glued to our television sets for the ground invasion of Iraq, right? Watching the Humvees like through the sands there and into so-called like getting into Baghdad. And And the rationale for an all-out declaration of war was the nuclear bombs.
Nuclear.
Right? The nuclear weapons. Am I saying it wrong?
No, well, no, George, you got to say like George Bush, nuclear.
Nuclear.
Yeah. And they turned out, right? They turned out to not have been there.
Right.
And so, you know, the levels of distrust, it might sound like, well, Tim and Johnny are on and they're just a couple of Trump haters. Well, yes, yes, we are. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, just to be sort of fair about it, I kind of have, you know, a historical reference of experience with our government's proclamation or go to, well, they have nuclear weapons. It's almost like on the playground, right? Well, he pushed me first, yeah. Right? And so, you know, I'm grateful that here we are, you know, a week and a half out from stuff, and it hasn't escalated as quickly as I had worried it would or turned into. And hopefully this is a matter of diplomacy now.
I hope it is too, but you bring up a point, and I know, you know, everybody listening to Bust the Pencils. What do you look, this is educational, so just work with
absolutely.
Us. When we come back after the break, we'll get to it the way we normally do. But you brought up a point though, Johnny, where you say it's like, you know, the rationale for going to war.
Yeah.
It, you know, particularly in our lifetime, like you said, is that there's kind of like going, okay, that's not really why we went, and we find that out. And so there's a distrust, right? And even that, it's like, yeah, Iraq, weapons of mass destruction. No, they didn't. But I also, at the time, you know, there was people going, it's like, look, Iraq doesn't, they're not the problem. If any problem exists, truly, it has always been Iran, and knowing that funding of terrorism, whatever, you know, but it's like, and so now potentially if this was, quote, somewhat or semi-justified, like you said, you and I are kind of tilted in the going, well, you say this is what you did it for and why you did it, but we have, you know, 58 years in my case of literally going, and you said you weren't, I was born in 67, and actually a little bit of memory, you know, by the time I was 8 or 9 years old of the coffins coming home from Vietnam, a little bit of memory, but realizing that even that was like, what were we there for? And so the, what were we there for kind of mentality that you and I carry around creates a real distrust and a doubt that whenever somebody says we had to do this, you start to go, well, I don't know. Did we? Because I got, you know, 40 plus years of me remembering that actually we didn't really go there for the reasons you said. And it seems to be upsetting, distrustful, and that's not good to create a citizenry that is, you know, along the lines of distrust isn't bad, but trust us, but hey, trust us, we'll be back.
Yeah, we definitely will.
That bass line there. Mm-mm, it sounds like when it comes in there. Hey, I told you, trust us, we'd be back. Here we are. Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, Chairman of the Boards, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Yes, we are busting pencils. People driving around all through the civic media listening area. If you're listening to us right now on your radio, on your app, thank you. We appreciate it. If you're downloading this show, hey, we like you too. We don't play favorites. We just appreciate everybody. But, you know, always like to imagine somebody out there in their car right now going, hey, Tim just said hi to me. I appreciate that. So, John, you know, that's
how. Well, yeah, Tim, and I'll be honest, I play favorites. If you're a fan of civic media, well, then I'm a big fan of you. So
there you go.
I'll be the guy who plays favorites. I also play favorites around, you know, that you're out there exercising your civic responsibility by doing whatever it is you do today. while you're listening, whether it's a weekday or a weekend, you know, you're part of it. It's like we the people, that's the core of democracy. And education, as we often say, Tim, is the bedrock of democracy. So talking education and talking all things related, right, which current events we started off the hour with, you know, our past couple of weeks, if we were in classrooms, you know, school's out for summer, but if we were in classrooms, social studies teachers would be navigating the what's happening in the world question and teaching current events. And it's always, it's never a favorite lesson, but it seems though it's rather frequent, whether it was us teaching about Ukraine or what's happening in Gaza in the last few years, you know, but violent conflict around the world is always a tough but real lessons that social studies teachers have, you know, in their toolbox.
Yeah.
You know, always age appropriate and developmentally appropriate. But, you know, whether it's young people that you're reminding them that it is the work of grown folks all around the world to make sure that we're safe and that families and children are safe everywhere and assure them that, you know, they're safe and that diplomacy is always one of the best outcomes that we can hope for. And I'm hoping for it, Tim. It seems as though we're in a moment of some diplomacy, and maybe that's me being a little more optimistic.
We'll take it though when it's there, you know, we put it there. But Johnny, okay, short segment here. We know this, and you know, you guys, you know, stay tuned, listen tight. So I want to set up though where we're gonna make this pivot, because we're going to get back into education. And last week we talked a lot about actually giving an example from the second year law student who decided to say that originalists and white people are awesome, and therefore it's illegal for anybody to participate except for white people. Okay, right. Great. And we talked about, well, we had the example though, that when students, you know, back a few, you know, maybe a decade or so ago when you were teaching, when I was teaching, some students that actually put forward kind of a racist tilt or a racist tint, and we called them on it because our accreditors were one of those things where we said in teacher education, anti-racist teaching was required by our accreditor. And so we felt that we had the ability to step in and, again, not fail the student, but educate them on potentially the fact that they're presenting what could be a racist viewpoint, and that could they reconsider? Is there a way to talk about it? And then realizing that, boy, in today's world, that might not work. And here we are now in, we knew this was coming. We talked about it, you know, the whole accreditation system now in higher education is fully under attack, because 6 states partner to launch a new accreditor. And this is being driven, of course, by one of our favorite governors, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, putting together this new higher education, public higher education accreditation system, largely, as he points out and says, because we need to get rid of the woke indoctrination system stranglehold that the current accreditation system has on American public higher education. And therefore, we are going to create a new accreditation system that will be, and I love this, will be focused on student achievement and not woke indoctrination, woke ideology, and all of that stuff. And I got to think about this. I want to, again, frame this from the standpoint of going, I got to tell you, deep down in my soul, I hate accreditation. I got to tell you.
Anybody telling you what to do.
Well, I don't. And some of the arguments that DeSantis and the anti-accrediting people make, they've co-opted legitimate concerns, I think, with the accreditation system, in that potentially, and I think, you know, this to me is also a sign of the accreditors not realizing that the world is changing and they themselves need to adapt. And I will say that my criticism of teacher education, I'm going to keep it where I know, my criticism of teacher education accreditation, CAPE, AQIP, you name it, really, I put it to the forward and saying, first of all, I never met a principal who ever hired a teacher because they were from an accredited college. So therefore, it doesn't carry that much weight because principals don't know about it. The other part was I've never come out of an accreditation process where everybody went, wow, that was awesome. And in fact, the person who led it is typically hated by the rest of the college at that point. And more importantly, though, what is accreditation doing? And teacher education accreditation during the teacher shortage could care less as far as I was concerned. And that was one of the reasons that, hey, step up and be relevant. What are you doing for the moment in the realities? Johnny, setting up the context so when we get back, you can either rip me apart or add some more. Loving everybody listening. Busted Pencils, fully leaded. Back after a minute. Oh, yeah. When you do that, when you hear that music, make sure your head is far enough away from the nearest wall so you don't really go through with what could be a real painful experience. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, education talk, educated educators, talking education, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, Jacob, chairman of the board, me, Dr. Tim Slecker. Okay, Johnny, I was trying to set the scene for accreditation. Yeah. DeSantis, hey, man, these woke accreditors, we're doing away with them. We're making our own. I kind of let in a little bit of my frustration with accreditation. I know you got a kind of a rebuttal, I think, or?
Well, yeah, first, given the story that we're looking at, we're not shocked by this as people in higher education or anywhere in education. Remember, education is a state right, and it's in large governed by local government. Which, whether it's your state government or your local school district, school boards, i.e. those kinds of things, usually there's a state superintendency office, right? And that's sort of like the head of, you know, what do we need to do as programs, right? What are the courses and that students need to take? Are we teaching great? Do we give meaningful assignments? All the little details. I'm a fan of accreditation, Tim. Might shock you. I've had both awful experiences with it in some of the larger, more federally, organized third party kind of, I'll call them companies, corporations, right? That seemed less interested in our students and then us and more interested in, providing a service, which is an important service. Like, I think to be accredited is important. You have to have a system of checks and balance in anything. You have to show that you are experts in your craft or trade. And that's, looking at any industry, right? You have to have, if you own a restaurant, you have to pass health codes, right? It's not anything goes. Same thing in education. Like, you have to have an outside sort of an audit, we might say, or, a group that comes in and observes, takes a look at what you do. Probably talks to some teachers, talks to students, looks at examples of student work, looks at the programs and the policies and everything, and for the everyday listener who's not in education or familiar with accreditation, it's a lot like being audited, right? They just go through everything. And that can be a painful experience in terms of, it can sometimes not make sense. Like, you may have had that experience, Tim, like, why are you looking at what you're looking at? That stuff, it's not really important to what's happening for teachers or for our students in context. And so accreditation, it's something that can be great. It's something that can be awful. When it's great, I'll focus on that. I'm the optimist. When it's great, It is a wonderful opportunity to get feedback on what you're doing, right? Like, hey, these are interesting courses that you're offering. Here are some practices and policies that we've noticed as accreditors at your peer institutions or at other places you might want to consider, or kind of gives you a list for improvement. As a coach, I'm a big fan of coaching, right? So kind of in its best format, but the best experiences I've had with accreditation are when I'm getting great feedback on my teaching and on my, you know, the programs that I'm a part of, the university departments that I work in and how we're doing, you know, gives us a little bit of feedback. We have the evidence. We know how our students are doing and what they're doing out in industry. But a great accreditor often has people also from industry, you know, observing and looking at what you're doing to say, yep, actually, this is aligned with the kinds of things we're struggling with out in the field. Like whether it's, you know, we're talking about teaching, having teachers as part of the accreditors or other principals and people in education. So when it's good, it's really great. Just like any kind of coaching, when you have a good coach, you're getting better. And I like to say that every time I get in the classroom, I'd like to get better at teaching.
Okay. Right?
And so it's been a helpful tool in that process. Now that said, it's also like an audit can be, it can be punitive and not formative. It can be not good coaching, just like you might be on a team with a bad coach and then nobody gets better and everyone hates their job more at the end of it. And unfortunately, Tim, I will agree with you. I think there are more bad accreditors, like people that don't necessarily partner.
You mean people working for the accreditation firms?
Firms and organizations that they lose that focus of, you know, hey, we're here to take something that's going pretty good and make it better. Yeah. Right. And so that's important. Now, I'm not shocked at all about DeSantis because
I was going to say, let's bring it back here because I got a theory.
That gives context for our listener who's saying, like, wait, what's this accreditation thing Tim's talking about? But the DeSantis thing is like modern day, it's contemporary McCarthyism. You know, it's the next step. And well, you know, like we were joking, and it's not actually a light matter, but that's us, Tim. We make jokes. You know, we talked about there weren't nuclear weapons in Iraq after all, you know, did the whole invasion and Desert Storm. And yeah, Saddam Hussein was an awful dictator and did awful things that shouldn't, no leader should do. So that aside, but there weren't necessarily those weapons of mass destruction, especially the nuclear capabilities that, you know, were leveraged as rationale or reason. You know, this whole idea about woke teachers and woke indoctrination, it's a dog whistle, you know, for the people who have unfortunately grown in mass to believe that, especially colleges, but even I hear it more. I hear that term woke teacher more at the K-12 level. You know, it's not as much in the media. The media talks about higher ed as woke indoctrination, but I hear it often, you know, in terms of good, referring to good teaching. Teachers that are really inclusive, teachers that care about all their students, teachers, you know, that are saying, hey, you know, I would not like there to be ICE raids in my school, right? That all of a sudden classifies them immediately as you're either woke or not woke in schools. And look, last time I checked, I wanted my kids' teacher to be awake. So if we're going to be literal about things, you know, I want them to be awake, not asleep at the wheel, not asleep, but awake. But you know, it's become sort of a coded language for saying like, well, that's woke, well, that's woke stuff, you know, that's liberal indoctrination. And you know, when challenged by it, like Tim, you and I were when we were talking about the hate speech paper written in Florida that challenged free speech and brought a great conversation to Busted Pencils around what's the difference between free speech and academic freedom, and when does something that's free speech cross over into hate speech, and how can hate speech or how is hate speech, you know, harmful? It actually is, and it's not allowed, you know, on our campuses, but free speech is, and those kinds of messy conversations that are part of democracy. Well, how can you have free speech but not allow hate speech? Well, hate speech crosses a line where it brings, you know, violent threat to groups of people or individuals, And that's not part of being included into a safe opportunity to be learning. But the same kind of thing when we said on that show, Tim, we talked about, well, but we aren't exactly even always necessarily teaching our own beliefs. That's bad teaching. Mm. We are held accountable by our accreditors or by our state agencies that have laws, especially at the state level, that say, here is what scientific consensus is on what a healthy education ought to include. Maybe that's like a holistic health and wellness curriculum that includes sex ed. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Teaching kids about sex, that's woke. You know, so when we say, hey, this is what we're required to do, well, then the next step is for someone like DeSantis, who's doing that witch hunt, that digging. Well, it would make a lot of sense that he says, well, if you really want to change things, well, we have to go after these accreditation agencies, and we have to make sure the people doing the accrediting, you know, aren't woke. So of course he's trying to implement new accreditation agencies and firms.
Let's go back to the reality that we presented again last week. Guess what? Yeah, all of my, I won't say hate speech toward accreditation, but my positioning. But one of the things we talked about back in it, we used the accreditor to say you can't be a racist future teacher. And let's be honest, what DeSantis and all these people who are going after accreditors are really going after is the fact that actually a lot of accreditation in higher education has stipulations about not being a racist. And they've now turned that into, you know, hey, Johnny and Tim were forced by their accreditor to be a racist by confronting a racist. And so now we're going to make our own accreditation system to fight woke indoctrination. And let's be honest, so we can install anti-woke indoctrination through the accreditation system. Let's be real that this is what this is. This is, you used to have your accreditors that would require you to be gentle, trustworthy, scientific, upholding human beings. We don't like that. We're going to call that woke ideology. We're going to get rid of the accreditation system. We're going to install our own accreditation system, and we're going to hold you to our new standards, which, and this is the frightening thing about going, because I know you're saying we're going to make it about student achievement. No, you're going to come after people teaching tolerance, people teaching about diversity, people talking about the reality of the scientific consensus behind climate change and the unsustainable ways that we typically go after energy. You're going after those things that actually, John, you say scientific consensus, human attitudes towards being an ethical, wonderful human being. You don't like that. You've classified it as woke ideology, and now you're coming after it, and you're going to install an accreditation system that is going to uphold your standards. And from what I've seen from DeSantis and all of the anti-woke crusaders is that they're really just looking to install their own system of indoctrination, and I don't really want to say that what you and I were engaged in, we were being held to hold standards of whether scientific consensus, morality, the reality. They're going to install a system, and let's just stay with straight science, that if you teach about climate change being a human impacted situation, you will lose your accreditation. And so they're going to use the hammer of accreditation in one way to beat up and install unscientific consensus and immorality.
And this is on par. I mean, we're seeing this with RFK Jr.'s, the disagreement people at the CDC, Center for Disease, right, are saying with like, hey, this is a huge step against what we know to be health and healthy, so it's on par for the course of, this political group But Tim, I'm with you. It's a form of like utilizing a system of checks and balance for your own political views. That in this case happened to be against scientific consensus, which is about as apolitical as it can get.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, one more round. Come on back with us. Like normal, but you know, hey, I was outside 96 degrees cutting grass. I'm tired, man. It's hot out there. But Johnny, okay, yeah, let's I know we're coming up here, but you were saying something during the break that made me, you know, kind of go, okay, look, accreditation is a statement of values. And the choice of, quote, accreditor kind of tells us about your value system. And if they're creating a new accreditation system and it's, quote, in defiance of anti-woke indoctrination, because they're saying that's the current value system, then what I would want people to be asking the question is going, so what value system will they be installing through this new accreditation system? And I don't want anybody to go, well, we'll have to see and wait and understand. No, you don't. We know what they want higher education to be doing, and they want higher education to be engaging in academic dishonesty. They really want academic dishonesty. And you said your CDC thing is like, look, you know, we're just going to have scientists on the other side of the vaccine debate. No, there are scientists who are anti-vaxxers, but there's not an other side of the vaccine debate. You're installing a value system by putting that forward that is actually going to harm us because you have an ideology not based in science. And then let's go a little bit further. I'm sorry, but Johnny, we've talked about it. We're going to be looking at some form of an installation of a white Christian nationalist viewpoint. And people, look, if you're a good Christian, that's great. But installing that in higher education's job is never and should never be to implement and install a religion. It was one of the great accomplishments was separating out the academy from religious indoctrination, being separated from the political powers that had made higher education horrendous, that created the Dark Ages. My goodness, people, come on, hold your values, be a good person, practice your religion faithfully, have the passion you have, but do not believe that what's happening here is some form of reimagining and holding close to your Christian values. This is actually upending our world view that understands that we have a lot more evolving to do.
And it's also just not true. I mean, that's the other thing about it is it, one of the great signifiers of a strong democracy, which I'd like to believe our country to be. And that's always a work in progress. But, you know, even in these difficult times, we are a democracy. And one of the signifiers of that is strong public education systems and included in that higher education, places where like people with different views on the world come together on a common good and learn together, learn things that are in the best interest of the strength of that nation, of our world, of our futures together on this planet. And so, you know, the false accusation that, well, there's all these woke teachers doing like political indoctrinating out there because they're not aligned with the viewpoints of, we'll say it here, like you said, white Christian nationalism. It doesn't mean that schools don't teach about what that is or don't welcome people with those beliefs into schools. It's just that it's not part of democratic growth. It's not part of having a free public education. I don't mean free at the cost. I mean like like with freedom and liberty, a public education system that explores ideas through balance and through like holding us all accountable to a common good. That doesn't belong to woke people or not woke. The whole woke litmus test thing is just a way of saying the choice of no choice. We want to do political indoctrination, but we're actually going to accuse schools of doing it and then force everybody in schools to do that. So, you know, it's not a new play out of the playbook. You know, it's like we went through this with McCarthyism. We've gone through this over and over again. We went through it with consumerism and high stakes tests. Tim, that was a big chunk of our teaching time. Was like, hey, you know what? We actually are part owners of these testing companies and these curriculum companies, and they're going to utilize government power and these accreditation agencies to say, well, if you want to get accredited, you got to buy these curriculums, use them, and administer these tests. And they also happen to cost a lot of money. So, you know, they're manufacturing customers out of our public school system. And we were up in arms about that. Now we've just completely gone to the tomfoolery, to the malarkey of, well, there's all these woke teachers. First of all, there aren't. Second of all, even if they were and they were teaching best interest, let's get it. Wait, I heard thunder.
Yes, you did, man, because is not life miserable enough? Comes not death soon enough without resort to the hideous enginery of war? Jacob with the moment of thin there.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's broadcast. If you want to grab more Busted Pencils podcast, well, you just go on over to Apple, Spotify, or you could always get at us at civicmedia.com or at our website, bustedpencils.com. And you can always find great Busted Pencils content like today's show on Mondays for Homeroom, Wednesdays for Class in Session, and on Fridays for Producers Jacob's Choice. And of course, Pencil Busters, you can always tune in and listen to the Busted Pencils weekend broadcast on Saturdays, 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media networks for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny. And keep busting pencils.